Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. Without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Hey everyone, this episode was recorded a few months back before the COVID pandemic. Obviously, a lot's changed since then. I sit down with Seth MacDonald from All Star Opera, and we discuss the Seattle World Tour Great Deal, which unfortunately the shows themselves were canceled. However, all the acts still rallied together and did the merch drive we discuss a bit during this episode, where all sales went to Mary's Place, which was truly a beautiful thing. Nonetheless, Seth has an incredibly inspiring story, a ton of great advice for artists of all stages in their career, and I'm just really thankful that he came on and was so open and honest, really pours his heart out, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is involved in so many things that listing the projects would literally take us all night. He's produced on tracks with millions of streams on Spotify, including Currency's Plan of Attack. He engineers countless records here in Seattle, has helped launch the careers of many esteemed artists also in the area, having worked with Marshall Law Band, which is actually how we met, Chris King and the Gutterballs, Soul, Bitadette. Moreover, he plays keys in Real Don Music and All Star Opera, the latter of which he's also a songwriter. So without further ado, that is all just the tip of the iceberg. Please welcome one of the hardest working men on the planet, whose heart is as massive as his workload, founder of the Seattle World Tour, the recently engaged Seth MacDonald.
Recently engaged. Yep, I'm someone's fiancé.
Yeah. How do you fit it all in?
Oh, you just keep going. You just try to be present as much as possible, and you keep going and plugging away. And Walt Disney said Disneyland was never done. And sometimes it feels like it's never done, but you work hard and you play hard. And when it's time to play, you take a concrete amount of time off and you just unplug completely. And that's the style for me, I guess. Yeah,
for sure. What is your unplug and play?
Unplug is like, I'm going to Mexico City next week. For a week, and so, you know, I might be doing an hour or two of work during the week each morning, but other than that, like, just going around and eating and having fun and going to the park, that's where I want to be.
So I guess if we rewind before we get to the countless amount of things that you're involved with, if we take it all the way back to the beginning, what was the role of, like, music in your life growing up, and did you know that this is something you wanted to do early on?
It was interesting. I definitely always gravitated towards music at a very young age. Like, I can remember hearing Beck's Loser, like the Soy Un Perdido, I'm a loser, baby. I remember hearing that as the, like, that's the first song I remember hearing, like, 3 years old, like, in the backseat of my mom's car in a car seat. And then my mom's boyfriend, partner of, like, 6 or 7 years from, like, when I was 5 to 11, he played in this band called the Hungry Crocodiles. They were, like, this 90s grunge band in the early 90s. They were opening up for Pearl Jam. They played at all the venues. It's really cool at the Central Saloon down in Pioneer Square. My dad has a poster on the wall with, like, all the famous, like, Nirvana, next to Nirvana posters. He has, like, two posters on the wall. And last year we got a poster on the wall, and it looked like, it's like, there was no more space on the wall after they put ours up.
Wow.
And so it's really cool to have, but that's my stepdad, you know, but actually over time, like, long story short, he basically became like my real dad, even though they were only together for like 6 or 7 years, because he was just there at such a pivotal time. So I was around music so much. Like, there was band practice going on downstairs, like, 4 times a week, it felt like. So I was just always hearing it, and my stepdad, Rick, he was just always listening to so much new music, both hip-hop, like Beastie Boys, LL Cool J, And then like stuff like the White Stripes. He was like the first one he had like this burned demo CD of the White Stripes before it like even came out or something. I just remember, like before they ever blew up, I mean, like, mm-hmm. Like 2002, 2001, he was listening to KXP 107.7 The End. And then by like 10 or 11, I just got in with the wrong crowd at like in fifth to sixth grade. Like, I don't know how you do that, but I did. And they were super into hip hop. By the wrong crowd, I mean like these kids ended up going to like juvenile detention, like yeah. at a later point. But they were my best friends, fifth, sixth grade. What was funny about that is they were so into hip hop. So I was really into hip hop, and I was probably a bigger music fan when I was in fifth or sixth grade, like knew more, had more, cause like that was just when we got computers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this little CD burn on the computer, and I'm downloading all this music off like LimeWire or Kazaa or something like that. And I'm making all these burn CDs, and I just knew about every single release that was coming out. I was buying like music magazines. I was a real music fan, and soaking up so much hip hop. And then as time went on, I kind of just like, through just so many various influences, found myself like equally knowledgeable and loving and passionate about like alternative indie experimental rock, and also hip hop. And so like, I was hanging out with like two different crowds in high school, where it's like, I moved to Spokane for a year. I lived with my grandparents. And I remember like out there, like I went out there and like, I was so into like emo music at the time, like ninth grade, 10th grade, like, I don't know, like The Fall of Troy, The Scene Aesthetic, Danger Radio, Daphne Loves Derby, all these old bands that I think of that are these Seattle bands, This Providence. And I went out to Spokane, and I'm wearing skinny jeans and like my favorite band's t-shirts. I remember I had this really cool Armor for Sleep sweatshirt that I loved. And then I'm also playing on the basketball team there. Like, I'm on the JV team. Like, I just remember thinking, or like just showing up to practice sometimes, and like, these kids are on the basketball team are so different than who I was. Cause when they see me during the day in the hallway, like I'm wearing like skinny jeans, and like, I just like, I'm way different than them. And then I show up to basketball, and like, and I was able to hang. And so like, when I was with like my basketball friends, I'm listening to hip hop. And like, when I'm home, like I'm probably just like, I'm probably listening to some hip hop, but I'm also just surfing whatever like I grew up inspired by, and like seeking out different iterations as time, like as music evolves and people continue to release music, you know, gravitating towards both sides of the spectrum. And I think that kind of has influenced me to just, in short, sorry, I'm taking so long to answer.
No, that's perfect.
In short, it's taking me on a path where I can work with someone like Chris King and the Gutterballs and help him just as much as I can help my own band, which is more of like a hip hop soul thing, whereas Chris is doing like rock Americana, you know? And I think it's because I'm passionate about both.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm like, and not just passionate of like, oh, I like, these are both cool things. Like I'm dancing to the music either one, you know? And so, and I'm also like writing songs for both different things too. And I think it's just been a cool evolution as time goes on. You kind of just a product of your environment. And I've been blessed with a rare environment, and it would be I'd be a fool to not like try to soak up as much as I can with the people around me.
During this time, were you also playing, like you mentioned being like really inspired by all these different kinds of music. Did you know that, were you playing, and did you know you wanted to write?
No, definitely not. I was on the sports path. So I was playing basketball for a long time, taking it super seriously in high school. I moved back from Spokane back to Seattle my junior year. And then once I realized I wasn't going to make the NBA, like junior in high school, I, you know, just come to the realization, yeah. I'm 6'1", 6'2", white guy. It's not going to work out. And so I shifted towards wanting to do sports broadcasting, actually.
Oh, right on.
And I thought like journalism, sports broadcasting was going to be my thing. I was like the co-editor of like the sports page on my high school newspaper. I had like an op-ed column every week. I thought that was my path. But then as time went, I went to Central Washington University in Ellensburg for a year for journalism. And I passed all, I got 45 credits, moved on to my sophomore year. And I started really thinking about it, and like print around that time, this is like 2010. I also had a girlfriend in Seattle, but also like print was dying, still is. And I realized I wasn't really going to be happy doing sports broadcasting unless I was the guy on SportsCenter, but like specifically SportsCenter.
Right. Yeah.
You not like Q13. Like I wanted to be one of the dudes on SportsCenter. And if I wasn't on SportsCenter, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be happy. And I was like, that's a really slim margin and like small window to cram yourself into. But I just love SportsCenter. Like to this day, like sport, like I would pay for cable, like just to have SportsCenter. And I don't even need the sound. I just love sports.
Yeah.
It's just like such a soothing thing. Like, yeah. It's like the one, I don't have a TV at my house right now. It's like the one thing missing in my life is just like a healthy dose of SportsCenter. I know that sounds such like a bro-y thing, but like if you just grew up watching SportsCenter, it can entertain you for so long.
Oh, 100%.
More than like most things. Cause you're just watching people just do it's the highlight of the best moments.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the best way to consume sports.
Sure.
It's just like a couple. Okay. Oh, cool. You guys had a great time. Like,
yeah.
No, but I didn't start playing the piano until I dropped out after freshman year, just cause I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I took a year off. I had this hair loss disease called alopecia. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not, no.
It's just like an autoimmune skin disease. And so from 18 to 20, I had nickel and dime sized bald patches all over my head. And I was doing a lot of toxic things at that time. Like by that, I mean like just illegal things. I was selling a lot of weed. And I'm not afraid to say that. It's a legal thing in our state now.
Yeah, I mean,
back then it was just stigmatized.
Yeah.
But the stigma was so strong for me growing up in like a Catholic family that I was like, man, well, it's not even a stigma. It's the risk. It's like if I get caught.
Yeah.
And I see your Oregon Ducks thing. I was actually driving down to a similar area around there to get it. And so I was just super nervous about that. That was a huge thing, but that was actually how I was surviving. But I had no idea what I was doing with my life. I was dating a girl who was super, just not the right one for me. And all those things adding up, I was living a stressful lifestyle in retrospect, and I didn't realize it. And I think partly because I didn't know what I wanted to do. But I had this hair loss thing, and I spent the year just starting to practice piano. My roommate had a piano. He had these little basic chord chart 101 things, books. And I started just running scales. That's really like for a long time, I was like the kid who was like afraid to leave the stoop. I just ran scales for like 6 months.
Nice.
But I think it really helped me that I was like so afraid to get off the training wheels. I learned all the scales.
Right.
So it's just like, they all come back to me naturally when I sit back at the piano. Like there's some scales I have to like, okay, this is what it is. Like, and I can hear it now, but, so like 18, 19, I'm 29 now, 19. I'm just like playing the piano all the time. I'm out of school. Don't have to work much cause I'm working a 10 hours a week at Urban Outfitters. And that's just to like make it look like I'm doing something in society. But that's not where my money's coming from. And I'm just having my way about life. I'm eating like teriyaki every day and stuff. But that was really just like to make me feel better during this time where like I didn't want to go outside because of the hair thing. I grew up with hair my whole life. And so it was a huge self-conscious thing. But it also pushed me for the first time in my life to be isolated. I was so used to just like, I'm moving around and hanging out with people and like just being social and like I spent a lot of time with myself at that time, but like a lot of productive time of just like playing the piano and writing a lot. I also did spoken word in high school, and I think that was like the beginnings of like moving towards a creative outlet, or like just moving, like my life's moving towards a creative space. I remember like the rush of like speaking a spoken word poem in front of like 200 people. Junior year, I think, and I just was of high school, and I was like, that was crazy, that feeling. And as a kid, I remember I did some, just thinking about all the influences and how it traces back. As a kid, I remember doing a couple open mics with my dad, my stepdad, we moved down to the Caribbean when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
To St. Thomas, the Virgin Islands. And, he, you know, he was just doing these solo open mics. And I remember getting up there and I would either sing with him Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire or Weezer's Holiday. And, yeah, I would do that. Like I probably did that like 4 or 5 times while I was down there. I remember like by the 3rd or 4th time, I was like, I had no fear. I was just like, yeah, I'll do it. I mean, there was like 20 or 30 people in the bar, but still, it was like, I'm 10 years old. And this was, to me, that was a big deal. You factored that into like coming back to the sports world. And I know this is like, you're a sports fan, aren't you?
Totally.
Yeah. You factor that into the sports world. And like, I think this is such a like niche thing. Like if you have context, you'll get it. But I played a lot of video games growing up, primarily sports video games. And most of these sports games across all the different sports mediums have these like different game modes, like franchise mode,
mm-hmm.
or dynasty mode, or create a player. I took that stuff so seriously as a kid. Like I wanted to play on the hardest level, even if I lost.
Yep.
And I wanted to like really strategize and build the best team. And I thought that stuff was so cool. And I think that like, I know that sounds so funny, but like that framework of like almost like general management. I know that's crazy, but
no, it totally makes sense.
General management was, and it's, I actually sold my Xbox around 19 because I got to the point where I was playing like FIFA like 9 hours a day in freshman year. And I would get my homework done by like 1 p.m. in the dorm at Central out in Ellensburg. And then I'd play FIFA for the rest of the day doing all these dynasty mode things. And like, I loved orchestrating things. I don't know. And that was like always cool to me. I started playing the piano at 19 and, you know, lo and behold, like around 20 years old, I start cutting everything else out. I kind of have this like intuition that I need to start pursuing music after like mm-hmm. a year of like noodling around. I knew all this. I just knew deep down inside I had songs inside to share with the world, just music to share with the world. And I was trying to like create different things, but I just knew like my brain was just so small, like my musical brain at that moment, even though I grew up around music, I'd been listening to music.
Right.
My knowledge and skill set was so minuscule that I was like, anything I was producing, I was like, I was just honest with myself. I was like, this does not sound good. Like
right.
both from like an audiophile standpoint and also from like a, you don't know how to put songs together yet. Uh-huh. Like, you know, you like, you can write some things and like you have some ideas and pieces, but like, you're not, you don't know how to glue these together yet, and make it sound good. And so I went to school for audio production, at the Art Institute of Seattle, which is no longer around. And I enrolled at 20 years old. I cut the selling drugs out of my life, selling weed. It's not, you know, it's legal. And
natural substance.
Exactly. I cut the girl out of my life and I just started like really putting it out to the universe to like, this is what I want to happen in my life. And like, I didn't think I was ever going to get my hair back or anything. And that like, that's a whole side story. But like, I start going to school, for music. And then within a month of like, I'm 20, I luck up so hard and I get this internship for Macklemore and Ryan Lewis in November, of 2011. And I've only been going to school for a month. I don't know much about audio engineering, but like, I think because I was enrolled in school, I was a young kid, I ended up beating like 60, 70 people out for this thing. And this is before they blew up. And then like a year later, they just skyrocket. And, you know, I worked for them like every day for like a year and a half, like fall 2011 to like sometime in 2013. And then I would work for them here and there up until like 2015. And every now and then, if I see them, you know, it's like, hello. And, but like, you know, like the craziest things I got from those moments was just them putting me in the room, like allowing me to be in the room, because there's so many times where like just through observation or just shaking the hand and then it's up to me what I make of that handshake.
Yeah.
There was just so many situations that like, you know, like I can trace back to, it's like, okay, they didn't do that for me, but they put me in the room and allowed me, they provided a space where I could connect with other like-minded individuals. And I, through that, I can trace not everything, but a lot of the things I'm doing in some way or another through, like, it all goes back to that,
yeah,
to that internship.
And for folks who like weren't following them at that time, you, like you mentioned that year and a half, I saw Macklemore in a hat shop my senior year of high school in 2011.
Yeah.
I go to Eugene. I see him in Wow Hall, and he sells out like 300 people.
Yeah, I remember
that
too. And then
that year later that you're mentioning, it was McDonald Theater at 1,200.
Yeah.
And then I think it was 3 or 4 months later, he came back for Matt Knight Arena.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And I could break it down, though, into like how I see it in my brain sometimes. It's like you take the video games and the love for general management. In high school basketball, like I used to watch a couple different like inspirational like basketball stuff to get me to just train harder and harder. Like I was really in the gym shooting 500 shots a day. Me and my friend would go run up hills in Lake Forest Park, like really like trying to be the best basketball player, and just knowing that you had to work so hard. And then you combine it with like being around Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and another like the most valuable thing they taught me was just how hard you had to work. They're working 12-hour days. They're like they're pooling together their resources. There's a team, there's a structure, there's a method to the madness, there's an outlook, like, you know, like long-term outlook. And all those things to me were so fascinating. And also they just had really good stylistic taste and mm-hmm. so much like attention to detail. Ryan Lewis was this guy who was like creating his own fonts, like, and you know, he would spend like half a day like working on a font. And I thought that was so fascinating. And I think at the time I already had like a weird appreciation for fonts, but like watching him work on fonts, like I'm actually like a font fanatic now. And like, I bet you in another life I could like learn graphic design as far as like the digital side. I don't want to add any more.
I was going to say, I think you've got a lot on the plate.
Whenever we do like poster creation or any mm-hmm. artwork for anything, I am such a stickler on font, because it's like, there is a difference between a good, like even just looking at these, your Focusrite right here in this DI box that you're using. And like they were so intentional about the font they chose to represent their brand. And those are just like little things that like fascinate me so much.
Yeah.
And I think they're like, those are like just small little like web products of like the nucleus that I am today.
100%. And one of the things along that vein that stood out to me so much that I've passed along to others is you were talking about when you hear an artist or see an artist for the first, I'll be as serious about your music as you are about your album art. And I was like, whoa.
I you know, that's a weird, funny thing that I don't remember saying, but like now when you say it, like, yeah, you're right. Like I like, if I see some impressive artwork, or just it doesn't, impressive is so subjective. Just totally. Like, I love simplicity, you know, it doesn't have to be this crazy design, but I'm just saying like when you see something that's like off balance or like the colors don't work or it's too saturated or whatever it is, there's some sort of like physical reaction that happens, at least for me, maybe not for everyone, that it's like a cringe. Like, mm-hmm. Like why didn't they move that over? Or like, did they not see it was super saturated? Side note, I remember this, but side note, once I started following, my path towards music and like really listening to my heart on what I needed to do with my life, my hair started growing back. I've only met one or two other people who've gotten their hair back, so I feel really blessed and fortunate. I grew my hair out to my shoulders once I got my hair back.
Just like the joy I've had.
Yeah, like, I was so like, it was such a good feeling. And so, yeah, I feel like sometimes I also feel like a product of willing things to fruition through positivity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I like, it's inspiring for me to think about those times and looking back even in now as like, you know, it gets more, the more things you add to your plate, the more responsibilities, the higher up you go, the more like it gets a little more realer sometimes, mm-hmm. Where you like really need to like perform at a high level. But at the same time, it also just remember, like I always have to like think back to those times where it was like, you know, there was like a simple way of going about life of just like, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to be the best person I can be today, both physically, mentally, spiritually, and see what happens. And getting back to that space as much as possible has been huge.
Were you working, like, I know you mentioned like in high school, you're working out like crazy, just like trying to make the basketball thing happen.
Yeah.
Were you still like working out and all that kind of stuff as well?
I was playing basketball, but I was definitely like, I was kind of just floating by at Central. Like I got good grades, but like, the sports, as the school year went on, like I was like, oh, the sports journalism, sports broadcasting. I also think it wasn't like the best school for that. Like,
right.
There's like the Edward Murrow Broadcasting School at Washington State University. Like, I didn't get into Wazoo. Like my, I just didn't try that hard in high school. Like my GPA was really bad out of high school. Like my GPA was probably like a 2.1. I had like one good year in Spokane. I've just been such a, and I think I'm getting better. I'd like to think, but, I've been such a, like, if I'm passionate about it,
yeah.
I'm going to be one of the best people you've ever experienced with it. And right. if I'm not passionate about it, like shit.
Yeah. Well, like, I was going to say when you finally,
you should hire someone else. You should get like, you know, and it's like, so it's, yeah. And I've had to really recognize that as time has gone on.
But did you feel like when you started, were coming into yourself in the sense of you were, you know, you had something you were focused on and then clearly you were passionate about. Is it fair to say that's kind of what brought some of that healing along of physically and spiritually of figuring out what you wanted to do? And
yeah, absolutely. I think being able to explain to myself where I wanted to go helps you move forward, simply put.
Right.
Every day. Just like, what's my long-term goals? How can I focus on my intentions? How can I give attention to my intentions to reach those goals?
You mentioned basically that kind of whirlwind of the year and a half that you're working with them. Coming out of that, can you walk through what that looks like afterwards? I'm assuming by then you've, you know, kind of honed your engineering skills.
I was getting there.
Yeah.
I was getting there with my engineering skills. I was like, I was pretty far along at the Art Institute by 2013. I lucked up and I got a job at Purple Door Studios in Belltown. And I mentioned the live sound thing because I didn't like live sound.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, it was either the sound man's fault or the band played amazing.
Right.
Those are the two spectrums.
Yep.
Black and white. And for a while after the Macklemore thing was phasing out and they were always on tour and there just wasn't much work, I started like, okay, well, like, I guess back to normal life. Mm-hmm. Like, I met some people that was cool, and if I see them, we'll say what's up. But, like, I was still so early in my piano, like, still, like, probably still playing scales majority of the time still, just branching out. Engineering, but, like, still, like, I had a little home studio thing where I had, like, a little vocal booth, and I was trying things out, but, like, you know, like, still getting the hang of it, still learning, and I started spending more time at school, too. But I got nervous, like, okay, like, maybe I just lucked up and I'm going to get this degree and I'm going to do some sort of AV job or something. But then I just got a call while I was working out in Kirkland at this place, Carillon Point.
You ever met? Yeah.
I was renting out water skis and jet skis and boats at Carillon Point in the summer of 2013 while going to school. And I get a call to be an engineer at this studio that was co-owned by this producer, Jake One, and then this producer, Justo. Justo is the one who reached out to me. I had met him because the person who hired me at Macklemore also worked for the Blue Scholars in the physics.
Nice.
And so she introduced me to that whole crew. And this guy from the physics was opening up a new studio in Belltown with this Grammy award-winning producer, Jake One. He's like a hip-hop legend. He has a funk group called Tuxedo with Mayor Hawthorne. And so he asked me to engineer there. And I was on cloud nine because I really just wanted a chance and a space to hone my skills. And I was like, at the time, I was like at school all the time, just applying myself. And like, I'm just like the type of kid. And like, sometimes I annoy myself with this, but like, if I'm into something or if like I'm doing something, like I'll be posting pictures of like working at school, like, and sometimes I annoy myself with that stuff, but like, it's just like what I'm interested in and it's like what I want to post about.
Yeah.
But that's what I was doing. So he was following me and he was seeing all that. And he's like, oh, like Seth would be a good person to like train up and have just like take the recording sessions and stuff. And so it was really getting that job and having like weekly recording sessions that really started expediting my skill set tenfold. Like, you know, I'm taking what I'm learning at school, but then I do what I'm at school for 4 hours and then I go to the studio and I'm there for like 4 to 8 hours.
Yeah. I guess two aspiring producers or engineers, what's your advice to them to get into those situations? I know obviously there's a bit of just like the preparation for when that time comes, and you got to make the most of it when you shake that hand. But
I got lucky. I definitely got lucky.
But I guess like when you get that opportunity, like
it started with like that connection started with like, I had met Justo the year prior. Crane is who hired this girl, Crane, Christine Geronimo. She hired me at Macklemore, and then she was friends with and worked for Blue Scholars in the physics. She introduced me to Justo at the physics. And then I just asked Justo one day, like, hey, could I come through and like, just like pick your brain about some things, like some things that I'm just learning in school. And like, and he showed me around on some things. And like, it was just that like general, like, hey, I'm interested in learning. And like, he was down to like teach, and, where like he took me under his wing, and I ended up working at that studio for like 2013 to 2017. But as far as like you're like, it's so hard. And sometimes I feel like such an anomaly. Like, have you ever read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers?
I have not.
The idea is just like Bill Gates and Paul Allen, for example, they became billionaires. They became like computer geniuses because they went to Lakeside in the late 60s. And they were like one of the first schools in the world to get computers, like old, like taking up the whole room systems. And it's all good. It's all good. Alexa, Amazon.
It's weird that she's yeah. upset that we're talking about Microsoft and not Amazon.
That's funny. But just like rare circumstances, like creating this, like all these different situations. And it's so crazy. And I think sometimes it would annoy someone who is like really trying to burst into the scene. But every situation I've gotten myself into is just like positivity, determination. I'm going to actually tangibly prove myself, and like willing it to fruition to some extent of like, just like, I'm going to like, you know, I'm not afraid of being told no, I'm going to cold call people. And also I think there's also like the skill set of like, originally going to school for communications,
typing, being able to write, be concise, get concise, your point across.
I mean, like sports journalism is like, get to the point first. And I'm like, this podcast is a prime example of why I dropped out, because I'm definitely just like all over the place. But I do think it does help though all the business stuff I do. Absolutely. Of just like knowing how to communicate with people. And I think it also transferred over into like when I met people. And like, I think that something that's super overlooked as well, especially in the music world, creative world, any creative field, is a lot of people are going to hire the person they can spend a whole day in the room with.
Yep.
You could be a prodigy, genius at whatever you're doing, but if people can't spend a day in the room with you, you're better off just getting your own home studio.
Yeah, no, it's so real.
And just be the prodigy you are, but hard to deal with. Like, yeah. You know? And so I'm not saying I'm like the chillest person to be with, but like my love for sports and my love for music, this is another thing too, actually, that's been like super helpful in life, is there's like two or three things that you can break the ice with any human being with that they're probably passionate about. They're either, sometimes it's both sports and music, but you'll get a lot of music people who are like, don't talk to me about sports.
Yeah.
Sports? No, just please. No.
Yeah.
And I can talk to those people about music for mm-hmm. so long.
Yeah.
And when someone's interested about sports, oh, they don't know that I'm actually like a walking encyclopedia, because I played all these sports games. Like, I know, I just like, and I love Sports Center every night. Like, and I just, I don't know, I've always been a sponge in that way. And so those two things have allowed me to just get to know people, right? Because those are things I'm genuinely interested in. And like, I think some people, like, if you're not actually into sports, you can expose yourself pretty quickly. If you're not into sports.
I mean, it's like the basic terminology. Yeah. If it's not there.
And so it's like, no, I can talk your talk, I can walk your walk, because like, that's what I'm doing. Like, and not as cool as you in my own perception or whatever. Like, cause you know, like hanging around, also trying to hang around people who are better than you. That's been a huge thing. And part of like, 18 to 20 and like healing, was cutting out just toxic people, not just like a girlfriend or anything. But just toxic people and environments. And to this day, I always want to be the like the least knowledgeable person in the room. And over time, it's kind of shifted where sometimes I've gone to a couple networking events where like, and this is not, it is a conceited thing to say, but it's like, oh, like I'm like one of the more knowledgeable people here. And I'm bummed because I wanted to come here and like
learn some stuff.
I wanted to learn some stuff, but then I have people asking me questions. I've only had it happen twice in the last year, but I was just like, oh, I need to like seek out, like I need to go to national conferences or something at this point. Like,
right.
And I do, like whether it's booking or like, I would love to go to NAMM. Is it NAMM? Yeah, down in LA.
Oh yeah.
At the Anaheim Convention Center. It's in January. But things like that. That's where like those, like that to me is like the next evolution of like, I want to be like, just like a drop in the pond and soak up as much as possible at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it definitely shows. I mean, if I feel like I've been on that,
yeah,
the receiving side of going to you and being like, well, what's going on? Like
we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses, and yeah, it's just sharpening it. Like, you know,
totally. And so during that time, you said 2013 to 2017, you're in the studio.
Yeah.
Had you at that point started also songwriting and working with groups, or were you pretty focused on engineering at that point?
So I joined a group called All Star Opera at the beginning of 2014. These two dudes who were my age, one of the dudes I had met in a freestyle circle up in Bellingham like 2 years prior, and that's how we stayed in touch. And we actually stayed in touch because it was this big freestyle circle of like 8 people, and he and I were the only ones who like actually like offered up something halfway decent that night. And if you've ever been to a house party, you know the freestyles can get pretty can get pretty bro-y, and they can get pretty non, just like not cool, just like weird, just like that 100%. Was corny or cringy. But he and I both were like really like vibing and like clearly loved the freestyle, and we were doing it, and we connected on that, and we stayed in touch. And when he moved back to Seattle, he and his friend were in this transitional phase where like the producer of their group was off to like rock with the, do you know the band Tangerine, rock band?
Yeah.
So the guitar player, he's a friend of all of ours, Toby, he was just the Tangerine thing was taking off, and he's like, look, I love you guys, but like this hip hop group, this trio of us, like, he didn't say it like that, but it's like, you know, like I gotta pursue this Tangerine thing because it's taking off right now. And so they were coming to me just like recording songs to like some beats they were getting from him and a couple other people, and then they asked me to like DJ a show. And I started hanging out with them. And so like 2014, I'm DJing their shows, and I really didn't like DJing that much. Like, as far as just like pressing play and like being a hype man in the back. And I had all these keyboards around me at the Purple Door Studios, and I'd already been teaching myself, but between having an upright, an organ, a Rhodes, all these different, there was like literally like 15 keyboards. I was like, I would be a fool if I didn't learn the keyboard. Like, I have to. It looks like so much fun whenever I see anyone play. You get a perfect note every time you play it. Whereas when I try to play the guitar, sometimes it's like my fingers just like, come on, my fingers.
Yeah.
And so I was playing all the time. And then so by like 2015, as I'm like doing the DJ thing, I'm starting to incorporate keys a little bit into the set. So I'm like pressing play, but like also I'm like playing some top line stuff on the keys. And I remember like I made my first beat. I started making beats with there was this good friend of mine. He owned the building in Belltown. And he lived upstairs in this really cool bachelor pad. His name's Crispy. We would make beats together, and I would go up to, he was just a beat maker, cool connoisseur of cool things, simply put. I don't know how else to put it. Just a cool dude. He's like 35, 36. That's my dude. But he just like really showed me how to make beats. Like without even like telling me this is what you do. I just got to watch him make beats all the time. And he made really good beats. Like, and so the second beat I ever like made with someone was this beat with my friend Crispy in like 2015. It ended up being one of the songs from the Physics album. Sorry, I was trying to remember where it's from. But he and I co-produced this thing. And like to this day, the Physics haven't put out music in like 4 or 5 years, but they still have like 30 something thousand monthly listeners. They were, besides for like Blue Scholars, they were like at a certain time, they were like one of the biggest hip hop groups in Seattle. Also my mentor is the producer of the Physics, and I just overall thought like it was like some of my favorite music. And so to like have my second beat ever be a beat that they use, and I just did the key stuff, like different synth ideas, that really gave me the motivation to like keep going with keys. And I don't think they knew that at the time, and I don't know if I've ever really told them, but like that was like, okay, like yeah, I should really keep rocking with the keys. And then by like the end of 2015, we were starting to get like cooler shows as All-Star Opera, like the trio, just three of us. And then we started incorporating like drums, guitar, bass, and I was DJing and playing backtracks, and I'd do some like simple key stuff and some vocal stuff. We'd start playing bigger shows with these bands who are clearly like no backtracks and the ability to just go anywhere you want as a mm-hmm. band with no backtracks.
Yeah.
Was just like our jaws would drop.
Right.
Like, oh, that's so cool. Like we're so limited. Like, mm-hmm. and like, we don't have the capacity right now as a cohesive unit to like figure out how to make our backtracks feel more like that. It's either we learn how to do that. So it was around the time where I was like, I don't really want to DJ anymore. Like, I want to play in a band. If you guys want to like take this band, like this whole band thing serious and drop the backtracks, I'm down to, we just start learning the songs we have already that exist from beats. And that's how like we first started in 2016, like the beginning of 2016, like the six of us jamming as a band. We were just like taking the beats that we had already had made, other people had made, or some of them we'd made, and learning those. And then by like 2017, like it was time to write new music. That was the first time where we really started writing songs. And that was like I'd been like tinkering on the piano and stuff, but I hadn't really formed full songs.
Mm-hmm.
Early 2017 was like the first opportunity I had, like where I was like in a like safe, creative, like fun environment to like, let's write songs. And we wrote like, I don't know, like 15 songs like that. And I was coming up with a lot of the chord progressions there, because I was just like I was just playing the piano all the time and I had so many different ideas. And that just like, once that happened, that's really like, I feel like I haven't looked back since like February of 2017.
Right on. That actually brings up a mini interlude segment. This is Marshall has a question.
Yeah.
And so he did want me to ask you how those days at the Purple Door did shape your outlook on music in Seattle. And the reason I ask that now is also you were just kind of talking about working there and starting to write and whatnot.
You know, I think what Purple Door taught me was get the music right first. Shout out to Marshall for the questions too. I actually met Marshall through Purple Door because I co-produced his album in like 2015, his Mill Creek album with him. I also wrote the hook on Superwoman.
Oh, what? Yeah, dude, no joke. That is one of my favorite hooks by them. Props. I did not know that.
I wrote that hook.
Oh, it's so dope.
I think what shaped it though, and I think I realized it in retrospect, was if you focus on the music and you get the music right first, the rest kind of takes care of itself. And it's only been in the last year or two where I've really started to like, okay, like, I got to get the music right first. And as someone who's like, you know, like out there as a music business person in the community, like putting myself out there as that, like, there was a time where I was like getting to the point where I was a little too business oriented. Probably in the last year and a half, I've had to like really almost like a tug of war, like shift myself back to like sitting down at the piano every day and like just getting back and like just continuing to be a student and learning. That's what I learned from Gesto and at the Purple Door, is like just always be a student, always be learning. Also, I also learned from them that like in seeing Jake One go out to like Japan with Tuxedo and like play these arena shows, I was like, you can really be successful in other places of the world and your music can really connect in other places more so than where you're at. And also, I'm at the point like the Purple Door days, like combined with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, I got to be around a lot of like high profile artists that would come through Purple Door. And I had a chance to like record a handful of high profile recording artists. And then I'd just meet different people. And all these people were like considered at some points, or like right then and there, like the best at what they were doing. And I think when you're around Macklemore, Ryan Lewis, Jake One, Gesto, the Blues Scholars, not as much the Blues Scholars, but like still soaking up around Geo every now and then. Jay Moore, rest in peace. And then as time went on, I got to be in sessions with like Harry Fraud, Elon, Nima, Nacho Picasso, the Sango, like all these different people, and like working with all these different people, it's held me to a quality that like is subjective in my own book. And like, it is taste, you know, it's just like about like what I gravitate towards as far as like, you know, what I think is a good font, you know, like that's subjective, but like, it's made me hold, like being around those people, what I observe from them is two things. Like they hold themselves to a standard of like what is dope, and they're honest with themselves when it's like, that's not that tight. and they're able to find like the reasons why it's not tight, and they're like, what, they either fix it or they keep it pushing and create something else. And then the other thing I learned from those people too is like, they're just big kids.
Yeah.
Have and like, that's the lighthearted answer, is like, they're just big kids having fun at what they do. And I think Marshall's a prime example of like just doing what he loves to do. And that's kind of part of like the last year and a half, 2 years of like getting back to like really focusing on the music, is just remembering like why I started doing this in the first place. And it was to put out music. It wasn't to be a music business person.
Right.
And sometimes I feel like just by default, I end up doing a lot of the music business stuff. Because the knowledge is there, and it's like, well, I might as well apply it. But if I had my way, like in 10 years, I would love to just be sitting at the piano, and like any knowledge I'm passing on is just like, if someone asks me a question while we're in a session, it's like, well, you could just do this or that. And then it's like, I don't even think about it, and I get back to just playing the piano. Like that's the dream life.
Totally.
And then go play some shows.
So in the spirit of that, over
sorry,
the business. No.
We're taking a lot of time.
No. This is
evening.
I just mean in the spirit of shifting away from business and the creative.
I like the business stuff. That's how we met.
Yeah, absolutely. When you meet a lot of artists or folks who are trying to make it, what is your thesis statement for them of here's what you need to take seriously about the business to be successful as an artist?
I think you need to take yourself seriously. You need to have like, you don't need to have a plan at this moment, but choosing to ignore the development of a plan in my book is like choosing to just let fate take the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not saying I'm out here controlling my fate. I'm just saying I'm going to like try to put together the best possible odd
right
at what I'm trying to do. Like, I'm going to try to like stack the deck in my favor as much as possible, whether it's continuing to grow as an engineer or as a pianist or whatever it may be.
Feel free to shut this down too. But what I picked up on when we met and started working together too, was just, there was intentionality and it was organized. You know what I mean?
It's it could be more organized some weeks on the surface than others, but in some weird way, it's always organized in my head. Prime example. And I looked today and I was like, I can't believe I didn't add the interview to the calendar. But I just knew in my head for weeks, 21st, interview at 5 p.m. And I think because I've been doing so much booking work the last year, I know where like all the dates land.
I had the exact same thing. And from the time we started working together, and just shouts out to you on air as well for just like helping me learn that process navigate that, but was the same thing. And I totally understand. I think what's great is it starts to become second nature.
And
when you're paying attention to those details, that also does bleed over into the creativity because there is just that focus when you get to the creative stuff, and the business stuff starts to roll faster.
I definitely agree. You start to pick up on little things. Like I know about a lot more bands just through looking at calendars. And then I start to see similarities of like, oh, this band's playing there. And then over time, like just through like so much exposure of looking at calendars across the West Coast, East Coast, it's like you start to connect the dots. And you're like, maybe I should reach out to that band because I see them playing everywhere. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I should just look at their calendar history and like, you know, just little things like that where it's like, well, this band's here, here, and here. I should stop what I'm doing and just go look at where they're playing. Because, you know, it's like, anything I'm doing, I wouldn't say like I'm a pioneer at any one thing I'm doing. And I've always just tried to like look at what other people are doing as like a form of inspiration. And then how can I take that and mold that into my own? Yeah.
Moving back to the creativity and kind of the stuff that you're creating. And again, like I said at the beginning, we could probably do a whole podcast series on all the stuff that you're working on. But one of the really cool things also that I've seen you yourself do, and just the people that are around you, is give back in a lot of ways through their art.
Yeah.
And I think a prime example of that is what y'all are doing with the Seattle World Tour.
Appreciate it.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit and what inspired that, and then how folks can get involved and just what to expect? And I know that's like a lot thrown at you at once.
No, it's quite all right. So the third annual Seattle World Tour is coming up this year. It started in 2018, January of 2018. We raised like $800 and had a good time. We did five nights of shows, Tuesday through Saturday. Each night is a different lineup. The first 2 years, All Star Opera played every night. The first four nights we would open up. The last night we would headline. This year we're just going to play the very first set and the very last set, and not play all five shows because to throw the series to the level we would like to throw it. And play all five nights, it just gets intense.
Yeah, for sure.
But the series, in the second year, we raised $10,000 for Mary's Place. The whole series, what inspired it, and what the cause is, more importantly, is we're raising money and resources for homeless women and their families here in Seattle. I think it's a mixed bag of things that inspired it. I think I can only speak for myself as opposed to the band, but like I was homeless multiple times, multiple stints of homelessness, both around 18 and like and then again around 21, 22, 18, 19, and then again 21, 22. And I was lucky. I had a car. I had friends that I could hit up, but like I just think about all the people who are much less fortunate than I was. And then how hard I perceived my time to be while I was homeless. And yeah, I think with all this music stuff, you and I are both in bands making music. It's all subjective. And I thought my dad's band growing up was one of the coolest bands ever. Like I still like have some of their songs stuck in my head. Like, and I know I've met some people who know who they are, like young people our age, which has always tripped me out. But I thought they were so cool that they should have been rock stars and they weren't. And so I've just started to look at like this music experience, especially as a, just being playing in a band, is like, whether we make it or not, I wanted to just look back and see like, we had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we took like the work seriously, but we didn't take ourselves so seriously that like, oh, we're trying to make it and like it's competitive and like I'm looking at other people like, oh, they're getting that spot. It's like if people like us and that spot fits for us and they want to have us in that spot because they like us and our music resonates in that way, like awesome. Yeah, does that answer? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And it's already grown at a massive rate from year one to year two. And what can folks do to contribute? Of course, the shows, like attending the shows is huge, but...
Yeah. So this year's series is May 5th to May 9th. And this year we have a really great lineup that's going to be announced on March 9th. This episode will be out so we can talk about it. We have I'll Fight You. We have Beverly Crusher. We have the Moondoggies. We have... I believe we have the Moondoggies. They said yes. And we're super stoked about it. They said yes. Yeah. And
okay.
Unless this comes out after April 21st, we don't have the Moondoggies until April 21st when we announce. Delete that part. So we have I'll Fight You. We have Beverly Crusher. We have, who else do we have? We have Hoshin. We have Scarlet Park. We have Baja Boy. We have Perry Porter. We have Experience. We have High Pulp. We have... I Am Shamel. We have Claudine Magbag. We have IU. We have Real Dawn Music. We have Tane Jr. We have Nobi. We have Samurai Dell. We're working on getting one or two other artists.
Got some podcast alum in there.
Yeah, it's a really good lineup this year. Trying to like keep the lineups eclectic each night. We have Chop Suey, Nectar, The Central, The Sunset Tavern. Yeah, I said that. And then The Crocodile. And we're super stoked. And All-Star Opera is going to be debuting a lot of new music at The Crocodile show on May 9th. Super stoked about that. And most importantly, if you want to give back, you can either buy a ticket to the show. $5 of each ticket goes to Mary's Place. There's going to be an auction of different items, like special to the bands on the series, where the money will go to Mary's Place. We're going to have Seattle World Tour merch. All the profit for that goes to Mary's Place. And we also host this series with Respect My Region. So there's going to be a lot of information on Respect My Region after March 9th on how you can contribute. But also this year we're going to set up a website where people could just donate ahead of time to a fund. But we're also hoping to get some of our sponsors to match this year. And we have a couple down right now, which is a great start. I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Sweet, man.
It's been a lot of work the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I can imagine just getting all that ready to roll. Do you still have time to even, like, are you still consulting as well? I know you mentioned doing a little bit you're doing with Baby Grand Records, but is there even
That's on a temp contract right now. I'll do, like, 3 or 4 consulting sessions a month at this point.
Right on.
Because I'm working with Chris King and the Gutterballs a couple times a week. I'm booking Bit of Dat right now, their tour.
Congrats on that. I just saw them announce.
Yeah, they're a groovy band. I'm excited about that. I'm booking a Saul tour right now. That's been a really cool thing that's come into my life. I've actually known Saul. He went to I went to elementary school with him for a year, so that
oh,
was,
wow.
That was cool. He's a couple of years older. And then we've been recording so much at All Star Opera. We've been writing so much music and recording. We're sitting on like 13 songs right now and trying to get to like 25, 30 by the end of the year. And then trying to go to shows and support when I can. It's like I see other people in the city supporting harder, and I definitely like with as far as like physically showing up to shows, and like I definitely commend them. But also I'm just getting to a point like where I really know where I want to go for the first time. And as an engineer, sometimes like in the last couple of years, it's really felt like just creatively like, oh, I'm only helping other people's dreams in this. And like, as time went on, it's like, I love engineering and I always love engineering just for the sake of tinkering around and like making things sound cool. And also just the technicality of sound. But, as time went on, it's like, you know, I want to make my own music. I want to like really like push my music, my creative ideas as far as I can as a songwriter for other people, songwriter for a band or two, myself, side projects. And so lately I've just had to like really be a little more selfish with my time, in the sense of like, if I don't like grab my dreams by like the collar and say like, no, like we're going this way, like time's gonna pass me by, and I'll be full of gray hair, and I will have never at least tried at the peak where at the time where I was at my peak energy, just youth, exuberance, all that, you know.
Yeah.
And I hope to be a jolly 50-year-old that's sprightly and on his feet and playing basketball still. But it's to say, I recognize that like 27 to 32, 33 is like, your body is like at its like full, you're just hitting like full development. And so, yeah, I just want to see what happens in the next couple of years if I really focus on songwriting. And sometimes I feel like I'm missing things out there, but trying to provide a better day, because it is really hard to survive in music.
Totally. And that actually brings me to the big three that we got, which is, why do you make music?
I make music because I don't like, I had a bad experience at a therapist when I was like sixth grade, where I was just like, oh, I don't want to be here. This is a weird situation. I don't want to talk to this stranger. And it's easier for me to write a song and process and heal, both good things and bad things, just processing, healing, expressing, observing, reflecting, imagining. It's that is the outlet for me to like really just speak my mind and really be direct and free about what I'm observing. And whether there was the internet or like record labels or like money in music or not, I would be doing music. It's like where I would gravitate towards, because I get such a sensational like feeling when I'm playing the piano and I hit some cool chords that like sound interesting to me, and I'm not even sure what I'm doing sometimes, like as far as like, oh, this is an add nine or like a sus four, like, you know, like I find out later when I like transcribe what I'm doing, and then I'm able to sync those up with like lyrics and melody that are true to something that I've experienced or felt. That to me is like one of the most blissful moments I ever have alone. Like some of my favorite moments are admittedly with like my partner, or with the band, all my partners.
Yeah. Hey, that's real though.
Yeah. But as far as like alone moments, yeah, as time has gone on, like I feel like the first half of life was spent like alone playing video games. But like it wasn't a productive feeling. And that's why I ultimately sold my video game system, as much as I still, like if I had a video game system, I would not be productive, because I'd still play it. But as time has gone on, finding music has been like that thing where I can waste is not the word. I can spend hours, and at the end, I have something to show for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just a way for me to like I can sit like me crying at the piano. But even from like just a like aside, emotion and spiritual aside, and health, mental health aside, just from a career standpoint, me being at the piano and like crying over like a memory or like something I'm feeling, and writing a song to that is productive for my career.
Yeah, which you can't really say anywhere else.
And if I'm working at PCC, it's not productive for me to be crying on my lunch break.
Yeah. That's right.
So music is so cool in that sense, where it's like, and it's not even like, oh, I'm going to turn my like my stories into money. It's like, that's not how I think about it. It's more so, it's like, it's just, it's productive for my own sense of purpose on this earth to create tangible things that I can look back on.
100%. And then on the converse side, like, what are you hoping that people get out of that then? Like, people who listen to your music, whether it's your bands or artists you've written for.
With the listener side, I definitely hope I inspire people to just talk about things both that are going on within them, also what's going on around them. But I hope more than anything, just with all the things I do, I inspire people to go for what they want to do, even if it means like sacrificing and working a job and like putting in extra time and losing an hour of sleep to make like your life better down the road. Because 10 years ago, my life, like, people told me not to go to the Art Institute because like I am sitting on student loan debt to this day. It's something I have to like figure out long term. And I'm working on it slowly but surely. But the point being is people are like, don't do this. Like, don't go down this path. Like, this likely will not work out. And I just went down blind with like blind faith. Like, no, I'm going to like see this through and I'm going to make this happen. That if you really invest in yourself, it's not going to be today. It's not going to be in 12 months. It's going to be 9 years later to like last week. Like, this is a direct moment from my life last weekend where I'm like, it's a sunny day out in Richmond Beach, Washington, out in Shoreline. We're headed to Robert Lang Studios to record the second day. We just got some delicious scones. It's a Monday. It's a Monday. And you know, like, society has trained us to like work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. It's a Monday at like 9 a.m. Sun's hit my face. I got this fresh scone and I'm walking back to like one of the coolest studios ever to go record songs that like I had a part in writing with people who I genuinely would like be friends with, whether there was music or not. It's like, it hit me like a brick the other day where it was like almost just like, thank you for like believing. Thank you for like getting me to this moment, like to my past self of like, these are things I used to dream about. And you know, it's 8 or 9 years later, but it's like, I am seeing the change now. And there's things that I would love to see change, like the student loans. I would love to see those change.
Yeah.
I'd love to see those disappear. But change gonna come if you decide to be like the conduit, the spark, inquire within and be the chain.
And you kind of just answered this, but what would you say to that younger self?
Thank you. That's it. I was trying to think of some wise thing to say, but like, thank you is all I would really say.
Yeah.
Especially around like 19, 20 years old. I don't even know when I look back and like what grabbed a hold of me. I don't know. But thank you for listening and just observing and listening and seeing the signs that were like, follow this, even when someone tells you no.
Yeah.
like go this way.
That's beautiful, man.
And I don't want to lead someone down a road where it's like, hey, like, you know, like a dead end, but like, I think if you know deep in your heart you're going to give everything you got to something, you should pursue that intuition so long as you're going to see it through all the way. I forget even which Weezer song it is, but he just has this line where he's like, hey man, we go all the way. And I've always appreciated that because I do think like you can really just see change through taking things to completion.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately in music sometimes completion is subjective.
Yeah,
when the song is done,
that's real. Yeah.
But in booking, completion is very tangible.
That's why I think I like it, is the payoff of like, oh, well, cool, it's done, I got
I like booking now more than consulting, as far as like as a struggling artist myself still, I know how much it costs to be an artist and the things we invest in. And I feel better at like as a freelancer, music business consultant, freelancer, accepting money from artists when I'm able to produce a tangible result.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, and people tell me all the time, like, no, like the things you're telling me like are worth it. Like I need, even when it's not tangible,
I can attest to that.
when it's not booking. And I appreciate that. Don't get me wrong. But for me, like believing is seeing.
Right.
And it feels a lot better to produce
and say, here's your dates,
or just like, now you like, here's a couple dates, and as time goes on you're gonna get more and more dates. You just keep at it.
Mm-hmm.
Consistency also has like one out. Once I figured out how hard Macklemore and Ryan Lewis were working, it's been like people would say I'm a workaholic probably, and I'm trying to get better, you know, going to Mexico City for a week. Trying to get better. We went to the dog park at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I took some time out of the day.
Here you go.
Yesterday. That was cool. But no, consistency, also.
All right. Before I let you go, To end, we're going to do a rapid fire.
Cool. Here. I love rapid fire.
Writing at home or in the studio?
This is not rapid fire, studio.
Paul McCartney or John Lennon?
Paul McCartney.
Good Kid, Mad City or Damn?
Good Kid, Mad City.
Favorite spot to unplug?
My apartment. Yeah.
Dude, I'm actually the same. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, where can people find you at? I mean, you got a bunch of different projects, but what do you got to plug?
Allstaropera.com. That's what I would plug. If you want to follow me on any of the social medias, it's Seth from Above on Instagram, Seth the Engineer on Twitter, and if you want to add me on Facebook, my name's just Seth McDonald. Yeah, if you see me out there, please say hello. I am always happy to answer a question, especially if it's just something I can like answer pretty quickly for someone. Don't hesitate to reach out.
Right on. Cheers, man. Thank you again so much.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. The whole town full of vibe, we chill. Hit the town with a smile for real. Ear to ear cheese like cartoon anime. Crosstown traffic bad now like can't it wait. But wake up, rise up and animate to a day. Usually enough to keep the cat at bay. Nine lives aligned, divine dials. My crimes incline my prime smiles. Have I been happy for too long lately? Relive my lows, you can't make me. The last treasure trove, who gon' take me? Nirvana, no, did you go crazy? Did you go crazy, Nirvana? No, did you go crazy? Don't demand no stunts, but it's still a packed whip, passing hand roll blunts. Still six finger jams with my vandals. Examples that can't hold a candle to my goddamn hold up. Asking to be a note from me, dog. Can't stop, won't stop till they know who we are. The squad plotting all masterfully. Your path getting after this March Madness money. Yeah, we aware that's the same old, same old. And we know the bankrolls can't save souls. Soaring high on the turbulent ride, rising above, gon' provide me a permanent smile. Soaring high on a turbulent ride, so high, so high, so high.
That was All Star Opera's brand new single as of this week, Papa. Be sure to follow them on all social media platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, all that good stuff. Shouts out again to Seth for coming on Made for Music and just being so open and honest. As always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Have a lot of great guests in the coming weeks, and I will see you next time.